Hi, it's Dave. Welcome. Today, I'm joined by Dominic Schaner. He is the co-founder of IOTA. They are a crypto platform that's preparing for the machine-to-machine economy. They currently have a market cap at the time of this recording of about $5 billion. And according to crypto market cap databases, they are number 32 on that list. Anyways, I want to welcome you, Dominic, to the show.
Welcome, Dave. Thanks for inviting me.
Awesome. So I'm excited about kind of diving into IOTA and your thoughts on the crypto space. Just 6 months ago, IOTA was about 25 cents, and now it's almost $2. So you got a big appreciation there. What's going on? How are you processing this? Is this unique to IOTA, or is this just kind of the overall crypto space kind of, you know, getting more adoption? What are your thoughts?
I mean, overall, I think the most exciting thing about the development of crypto since last year is that I think it's really grown tremendously. And there's obviously a lot of interest from retail investors, right? We see this in the communities where we now have more than 46,000 people on our Discord, right? So it's grown quite a lot in that regard. But we also see it in institutional demand, right? So I think the growth of IOTA has to do with the market itself, because the market has gone up a lot. The confidence has gone up a lot. I think that's important in today's markets, where it's about narratives and also how can these technologies be used in the real world. But obviously, we as a project, we've also grown a lot, right? We are now more than nearly 150 people working full time on IOTA. And we also have a pretty big ecosystem around IOTA. So yeah, I think it's both, definitely. Mm.
I mean, we had this big, you know, bubble and crash, you know, 2017-ish. Yep. And, you know, people are still a little bit wary of that. But is this time any different? So we had, like, just in the past 6 months, I'm noting total market cap of all cryptos went from basically 400 billion to about 2.2 trillion just within, you know, half a year or so.
Right.
Like, is this sustainable? Like, I mean, or is this time, is it different? Is it not a bubble because the adoption is real, right? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, it's the most crucial question that probably everybody asks themselves, right? What is different this time? And in every kind of market cycle, you have it where you're at the boom cycle and people try to reason for themselves and also to rationalize their investments by saying this time it's different. And that's a given, right? It is different. And one of my most favorite quotes is that history doesn't repeat itself, but it does rhyme, right? And I think what's different from 2021 to 2017 is that this year, we really have all of this financial infrastructure around crypto set up, right? It's much easier for institutional investors to get into crypto. It's no longer just GBTC, right? Grayscale for institutional investors. They have so many different options. There's regulated custodians. There's exchanges that they can be onboarded with. And Coinbase has how many institutional customers under their custody? I think like 140 billion, right? So that's a lot of capital just from institutional demand. And then we have retail investors. And I think this year, especially a lot of different factors came into account. For one, post-pandemic, right? Savings rate is up. Basically, people getting free checks that they can put anywhere. And obviously also the narrative has changed from there just being investments, right, like ICOs, to there being functional products that you can utilize. So I think yes, we are in a hype cycle. Is this sustainable? I definitely believe that we will see 100, 200K Bitcoin this year. But what's most important is that now we've really proven the blockchain and crypto in general has really good utility, and the use cases are there. Now we just really need to grow. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really what the next phase will be about. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I noticed with Bitcoin at about $1 trillion market cap, there still is over $1 trillion of market cap for other, you know, cryptos,
right,
which is huge.
Exactly.
You noted, you know, Bitcoin, you see appreciation. Is it mostly because institutional demand is so just keen on Bitcoin?
I would say so. I think when it comes to what's driving the Bitcoin price, it's definitely institutions, in my opinion. What's driving altcoin prices, it's retail primarily. Also, like we've from just looking at the numbers. Bitcoin is the gateway into the market. So that's why if Bitcoin goes up, it's healthy for the entire market. If Bitcoin goes down, everything corrects with it. So there's still this dependency. What's exciting, obviously, is that Ethereum is starting to decouple. Other projects are also starting to decouple. But I would definitely say that right now, the institutional demand is the most important one that is really driving up these big price movements.
Mm-hmm. Curious, what's your take on Ethereum? Do you think that, you know, going forward, Ethereum has what it takes to be the dominant kind of, you know, economic platform for crypto? Yeah. Or do you think there are going to be many, many players kind of divvying up, you know, that space of DeFi?
Yeah. No, it's a very interesting question, right? I personally believe that there's no winner take all. I think all of us really benefit from just growing this ecosystem, right? $2 trillion is nice, but there's a lot more potential out there, right? Gold is at 17, 20 trillion. And that just shows that there's more, a lot more room to grow for all of us. And I really think that we only benefit from the success of Ethereum as well, because what is the worst thing that could happen, right? Ethereum breaking down, like thinking rationally, because that just causes more fear in the market, causes more distrust in the market, and it also means that more capital will leave the market. And so ultimately, the success of Ethereum also means the success of the entire market. And I'm somebody that has been working closely with them since their inception, right? I lived with them in Zug in 2013, 2014. And what's most exciting about Ethereum is that it's no longer about a single entity driving it, but they really have grown to a global ecosystem, and they're focused on adding value. And that's what matters the most. So we are focused on replicating that success.
So you lived with them, actually. Where was this?
In Zug, in Switzerland.
Got it. This is like in the early, early days, right?
Yeah, very early. So wow. I've been, yeah.
I'm curious. Like,
crazy times.
Yeah, that's like, was it right after Vitalik released the white paper?
Exactly. Basically, I came to funny story, right? So back, I joined this space in 2011, and I thought that what I should really do is set up a crypto exchange. And so Charles Hoskinson, who at the time was the CEO of Ethereum, invited me to come to the Crypto Valley because they were setting up this regulated entity to help all the crypto startups and the companies there. And so I said, yeah, like I'll do it. I'll come there. And then I set up my company in Switzerland and I lived together with them in their apartment for a few weeks. Mm. So it was crazy to think about how it all started.
Yeah. Do you think that gives you some advantage, kind of seeing the early days where, for example, totally. Like I would imagine like these, you realize like these guys are just regular guys, you know, they're not like, legends, but they're just regular guys trying to figure things out. And everyone at that time is just figuring it out. It's just excited. And you guys are all, you know, on the same level playing field. Does that help you? Does that give you an edge where it kind of demystifies, you know, like the playing field at all?
No, totally. Absolutely. I mean, we've been through the crazy times where billion-dollar projects were advertised on Bitcoin Talk, and then you had these discussions where you did OTC trades with like Slack bots, right? So those are really the crazy days, and obviously because we were closely working with other founders, right? We were really core to the NXT community, right? Chainlink was born out of that as well. Cardano was born out of that. So we also know the other founders quite well. So I would definitely say we are on the OG level in that regard. And I think we all have a mutual respect for each other who have been around for so long. I think one of our biggest advantages is that we have been through the last cycle. We've learned a lot from mistakes in terms of communications, from mistakes in terms of what to focus on. And now we have become more revitalized in that regard with much better focus, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's amazing that early, you know, Ethereum crowd, how many projects have spawned. You know, you have Cardano, you have Polkadot.
Exactly.
You guys, you know, Chainlink, so many others. It seems like part of the idea was kind of Bitcoin could do so much more than what it does, right? Yeah. Not just store value, but that so much could run on crypto. And then there was this idea, you know, with smart contracts with Vitalik, and then now there's been some struggles with Ethereum with keeping, you know, let's say gas fees down, scalability. So now you have a bunch of other platforms and people are saying, hey, let's try a different alternative to bring down fees, to make things scalable. And it seems like that's part of your vision, you know, to make a better way, you know, to run transactions that don't have to cost a lot, that might be just free, you know, that could unleash a ton of things. So I want to dive into kind of IOTA, and I want to take first a higher kind of level picture, zoom out. And I'm curious, because part of IOTA is, for those who aren't aware, you know, you guys are basically feeless in the way you guys scale. Like, where did that need come from?
Yep.
Like, where did you say, like, oh my gosh, like, we need to do something that's just really radically different than, you know, other blockchains?
Yeah, so I think when it comes to IOTA, there's two important streams of how we position ourselves, right? For one on the tech side and for one on the use case side. And when it comes to the use cases, what we realized early on is that the Internet of Things is really going to be everywhere, right? We're talking about connected vehicles. We're talking about connected homes, smart homes. We're talking about connected cities and infrastructure. And we realized early on that blockchain will play a crucial role in the Internet of Things, right? For one, to secure data, for another, to secure these processes, right, smart contracts, and for another, to enable transactions. We want to make it possible for machines to communicate with each other, to transact with each other. Most simple example is the car paying the charging station, the electric vehicle charging station. And there's so many different use cases in that regard. And ultimately, what we bet on is this trend that we are going from automation towards autonomy of machines, right? Machines become smarter and smarter. And as such, they need to have data that they can trust, meaning that data is verifiable, to automate their processes, right? And to also have wallets, right? Machine wallets, so that they become their own economic agents, so to say, right? And that is really part of this machine economy vision that we had since 2015. And we've been really focused on realizing that the vision of the machine economy, working together with some of the largest companies in the world, like Dell, STMicroelectronics, Jaguar Land Rover, right? But also try to focus more on what is sort of the human component there. How do we as humans want to engage in smart cities? Right? So that's why we work on digital identities with some governments. And it's really all sort of coming together in that regard. And on the tech side, the focus has always been on doing things differently than blockchain, because again, like we said back then, like, blockchain is not scalable. Miners is really detrimental to the environment. And transaction fees, if you have a business model that runs on transaction fees, you will either run out of money, or you will have a very unpredictable business model that doesn't work, right? If you have varying transaction fees, you don't know how much money you will get. And as such, micropayments don't work. And that's why we came up with this new distributed ledger, which is called the Tangle. So it's no longer based on the blockchain, but it's based on this directed acyclic graph, right? It's a bit more complicated, but basically one transaction confirms two transactions in history. And through that, you start to get the security and the confidence that these transactions are valid. And through that, you can then enable the distributed ledger to function. Mm-hmm.
Seems like I was kind of looking into, you know, the Tangle a bit, and it's definitely an interesting concept, you know, where, you know, one transaction will, you know, you'll validate two other transactions. And this just grows to make the network more secure. One possible kind of critique of it would be, you know, can it stand a huge hack or huge computational, you know, just mega attack against the network? Right now I understand you guys aren't completely decentralized and that you guys have a coordinator role. So it's, can you explain actually the need for the coordinator right now? And then also maybe explain kind of your guys' plans for security.
Yeah, of course. Think like it's a very interesting challenge. Like think about launching the Bitcoin network today, right? You have a new genesis, you have a new network, and then you launch it. Then you're gonna have multiple scenarios happening. The worst case scenario is that somebody is able to double spend in your network, right? It sort of goes against the most sacred principles of a blockchain, which is no double spends. And the main reason why that can happen is because all of this infrastructure, right, GPUs, mining hardware, all of that is out there. And so somebody will eventually get an edge and will get 51% of the hashing power, right? So launching a Bitcoin network today would be near impossible. And in 2016, when our mainnet launched, we had a similar problem because we would launch the network, it would be prone to certain attacks, right? Where somebody would be able to get most of the hashing power in the network and thus try to do double spends. And that's why we basically launched a project with a different ethos. And our ethos from the beginning was, yes, we have to launch with this centralized coordinator that is there to help secure the network, to help to bootstrap the network. But ultimately, we will become the most decentralized network out there, where every node in the network is securing the protocol, right? It's not about a leader-based protocol like Bitcoin or Ethereum, where you elect a leader that then basically validates the block and puts it into the blockchain. But we said we are a leaderless protocol ultimately, right? Nobody controls it, and it's as secure as the network itself. But to get to that point, we obviously needed to invest more research, more engineering, to really come up with the right approach for it. And that is basically since 2017, we've been focused on Cordicide, which is like a funny name, right? The suicide of the coordinator. And this year, we are going to basically make it happen, right? This year, we have a very, our main objective of this year with IOTA is to fully decentralize IOTA. And so in just a couple of weeks, we're actually going to launch the incentivized testnet so people can participate in this decentralized IOTA already, which is really exciting. And we have a very clear roadmap right now to decentralize IOTA, and it's primarily about the implementation at this point. Mm-hmm. And maybe to answer your question about the security, right? We have a very exciting new concept on how to secure the network, which is called MANA. So you can think about it similarly to a way of proof of stake, right? So IOTA token holders will actually be able to stake their tokens to secure the network. And as such, it's no longer about hashing power, but it's really about token ownership, right? And I think that is really one of the most underutilized security mechanisms by some protocols, right? Polkadot does it successfully, Cardano does it successfully. And so we are also introducing this with our MANA concept.
Got it.
That's a very exciting
round. When is that rolling out, your MANA?
MANA, in a couple of weeks, we have the testnet, right? Where everybody will be incentivized to participate. And the objective is to launch it on IOTA, right? The mainnet by Q4.
Okay, got it.
End of this year. Yeah.
So in a way then, I mean, so you have one transaction validating two transactions. And then you're saying that with this whole MANA where it's basically, you're incorporating proof of stake, right? Where owners of IOTA can stake their tokens, right? And how is that going to kind of prevent, let's say massive hashing, attack, a hashing power attack?
Yeah, it's not entirely proof of stake. It's like a variation of proof of stake, because there's no inflation on IOTA, right? In that regard, but ultimately, the network is as secure as the amount of IOTA tokens that are being used to generate MANA, right? So somebody would, in the worst case, need more than 50% of all IOTA tokens to attack the network, right? To have a possibility to attack it, right? And that's at the moment $2.5 billion in that regard. So more in the future. But there's also different fail safes that we've implemented to make sure that an attacker is not able to take down the network, right? One important thing that I want to emphasize here is that we are really focused on peer-reviewed research. So we have more than 20 researchers in the IOTA Foundation right now, and we work together with nearly a dozen universities. So similarly to Cardano, we really try to get the research right. So Sergey Popov, who's like one of our famous co-founders, and by the way, he wrote one of the first papers on proof of stake. So he's also like on the Wikipedia page and stuff. And he always said, publish, publish, publish. And so we wrote a dozen peer-reviewed papers to really make sure that we get the concept right with IOTA, with this new decentralized version of it.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Right now, in terms of adoption, like, I mean, I love the idea of feeless, you know, microtransactions where you could, you know, send, you know, a quarter of a cent even. But right now, like, how is adoption occurring right now? Like, I've you know, in my research, it seems like you guys are still like trying to get production ready. Like, are people able to, if I'm a developer right now, am I able to use IOTA to do kind of machine to machine transactions, microtransactions right now, or am I having to wait for you guys to get production ready?
No, absolutely right. You can start developing on IOTA right now. We have some really great tutorials, module libraries, and all of that is live. Right. So already today you can start building. What we always say is that everything right now is a beta version, right? Ethereum is beta because it basically breaks up if you have a certain load on it, right? Transaction fees go up. Same with Bitcoin. Everything is still a beta version of itself. It's not production ready yet. And same with IOTA. We say that IOTA is not yet production ready, even though you can start building on IOTA right now. We still have to cross this chasm so that we can reach mainstream adoption, right? Right now, if you build an application and there's a few thousand users with it, that's great, but we are really talking about millions or even billions of users and machines in the future. So that's what our objective of this year is, to become production ready, right? Right now, because we had this big upgrade happening last week, which was like the biggest upgrade in our history, We basically have the best possible version of IOTA on the mainnet. The last remaining thing to do right now is to remove the coordinator so that it's fully decentralized. And then we say IOTA is production ready and ready with a few thousand TPS and is able to run reliably on this IoT system. Systems. Yeah. But when it comes to adoption, just real quick, we work very closely with big companies, right? We for example, work on products together with Dell, with STMicroelectronics. Jaguar Land Rover is also working on a car wallet, for example. And we also have some other exciting corporate partners that are really excited about IOTA. For example, Zebra Technologies, which is like the largest barcode scanner in the world. They use IOTA for supply chain tracking. And so we have some very exciting production cases that we're working on right now with those big companies. But at the same time, we are really trying to focus more on this tangible adoption in the crypto space. So that's why we have a big focus on smart contracts, on digital identity, and on digital assets, right? NFTs and tokens. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I want to talk about smart contracts in a bit.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, with adoption more specifically, can you give any numbers? Like, you know, how many like IOTA transactions, like microtransactions are happening every second right now versus, let's say, 6 months ago? Like, are you guys tracking that stuff, and, you know, what can you share?
So just to answer your question, right now we have about 60 TPS that is running on our mainnet reliably. We did some tests before, and it goes definitely above 1,000 TPS on the mainnet.
Are those actual transactions, or are they test transactions?
No, this is the mainnet right now.
Okay, got
it. So you can see transactions happening in real time right
now. And then how is that compared to 6 months ago or even a year ago?
The thing is, about 6 months, so here, by the way, here you can see the visualizer of IOTA. Mm-hmm. It's like one of the most amazing things to see how the transactions evolve. And 6 months ago, I would say we had about 10 to 20 TPS.
Okay.
Right? So because we had this big upgrade recently, And we also have a lot more activity because people, developers are much more excited to build on IOTA. Right? So that's why we also have increased activity. And obviously it's fee-less. Mm-hmm. So anybody can transact. This is what the tangle looks like here.
That's not real time, right?
That's real time.
This is real time. Oh,
it's happening right now.
It's happening right now. That's cool.
If you have difficulty falling asleep, instead of counting sheep, you can count transactions here.
Yeah, it looks like some biological function, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's, by the way, that's a very interesting topic as well, like how distributed ledgers and how IOTA also mimic nature and these processes, because it's very fascinating because you also see similar coordination happening in nature, right? For example, bees, if they're being attacked, they also have a way to signal to other bees that there's an attacker and that they should take cover or that they should try to attack even, right? Mm-hmm. And the same is true with distributed ledgers, where if there's a double spend, you can actually signal this to other nodes in the network so that they don't confirm this double spend. Mm-hmm. So it's a very interesting process in nature that is being mimicked by technology.
Okay, cool. Yeah, that was cool. I want to ask, I want to dive more into this issue of adoption, because it seems like, you know, without adoption, it's going to be very difficult. But with adoption, right, especially if you have massive adoption, a lot of doors open. It appears that a lot of your efforts, or some of your efforts at least, have been focused on kind of companies, right, corporations. Yep. You mentioned some like Dell and STMicro and Jaguar, Land Rover, and others. Some would criticize that as saying like, hey, you know, working with large companies is going to take forever. You know, it's just like, I guess they're moving too slow, and they'll spend a year negotiating and then a year testing it out, and then they'll scrap the project, you know, and you won't get the adoption that you're looking for. Why don't you focus on kind of independent developers? Kind of like with new technologies, the most resistant people are likely going to be the incumbent, you know, kind of corporations. Why not go to the people who are most open to it, you know, the indie developers, and try to find traction amongst those people rather than spending your efforts on corporations? What's your thoughts?
Yeah. No, first of all, you're totally right. getting an NDA signed with large companies can take 6, 7, 8 months. So it's kind of painful at times. What was important for us when we started the project, it was to really work with big companies to get their feedback so that we basically understand, do we solve problems? Do we have a potential market fit in this whole Internet of Things area? And we got a lot of great feedback from those big companies. That is why we had this big upgrade happening last year, because we got all this feedback from companies that basically said we would prefer to have it differently, right? And that's how we implemented it then into the core protocol. But the way that the IOTA Foundation is structured is that we have a sort of market adoption team that is like people that really work closely with companies and trying to get IOTA adopted there, because we have this philosophy, or we have this hypothesis, that all the crypto use cases are really amazing, but when we are talking about having millions of devices being rolled out, that is really what's going to happen by big companies, right? And that's why we do work very closely with them. But at the same time, what's really exciting about IOTA is that we have a huge community, right? We have 46,000 people on Discord alone, and they're really focused on building. For example, just I think like 4 weeks ago, somebody started working on an NFT marketplace and said like, hey, who wants to do it together with me? And then the community came together to build it. And I think what's been missing with IOTA so far is sort of this tangible adoption, because if we announce a partnership with a big company, it's exciting. It's like validation, right? Big companies take you seriously. That means that you really know what you're doing. But it's not tangible, right? If a Jaguar Land Rover starts says they will have a Kari wallet, it will take a few months to a few years for it to actually be tangible. And that's why we have really been focused over the last few weeks on this tangible adoption, right? That's why we're really trying to do more with smart contracts, with NFTs, and with digital assets to play a role in that space as well, because what's exciting about IOTA is that we are feeless, so we solve the problems that Ethereum has, and we are scalable, right? We can do more than 1,000 TPS easily on the mainnet. So we're definitely positioning ourselves there. Mm-hmm.
Like, it seems like there's a whole world of developers. Like, for example, you know, there's a whole world of app developers, of web developers, and even of small just device developers. And yeah, it seems like, you know, with micropayments, that there would be a use case that if provided for, like, rolled out feeless micropayments, it seems like developers could totally take advantage of that. For example, like, you know, if you had a connected scale or something, right? And every time you stepped on the scale, you know, maybe there was some type of microtransaction, or even in certain apps, it doesn't have to be per se a physical device, but let's say you do a certain activity or action, it could trigger some type of micropayment to some type of, right, service or another person. There seems to be a million types of use cases, right? Like, I guess my question is, why not target, you know, kind of the fast moving, you know, developers, startups, you know, that might integrate this super fast within a week versus the Jaguars or the Dells that, you know, might take a super long time.
Yeah. No, right. We're definitely doing both at the same time, because we have an ecosystem development fund, I think is more than $40-50 million at this point, that we're really trying to push into the ecosystem and to support those independent developers. So there's some exciting applications that were built by the community. And as well, I think what's been missing for the community, first and foremost, was really smart contracts. Because if you have smart contracts, it becomes so easy to build new use cases, right? There's limitless potential in that regard. And now we are really moving forward with that to enable it for the community to build on IOTA. I think when it comes to our priorities previously, it was really about getting the validation from the big companies, because it was important for us and for the community to understand that there is a market for IOTA, right? It's unproven tech, it's an unproven market. So you want to remove all the uncertainty. And because we've gotten this validation at this point, is really about how can we target those developers that you've been speaking about, right? Because they are really the most valuable asset, right? And we'll definitely do a lot more in that regard over the next few weeks.
Got it. Smart contracts. What can you tell us about smart contracts on IOTA? What's the timeline, you know, to roll out these smart contracts, and how are they different than, let's say, you know, an Ethereum smart contract?
Yeah. The way that you can think about our smart contracts is basically like Ethereum 2.0 and Polkadot. Essentially, what we are doing is we're running Ethereum on top of IOTA, but not just one Ethereum, but multiple Ethereums, right? And the way that it works is that we have the IOTA ledger, which is like the base layer. And what the base layer does very well is global consensus and to secure the smart contracts. And then on top of that, we can build an independent network, which we call IOTA Smart Contracts. And each smart contract has its own sort of consensus, right? It has its own sort of network and is sort of sharded, right? And what's very exciting here is that these smart contracts that are then basically scalable in their own domain. So think about running one Ethereum virtual machine on top of IOTA that has the TPS limit of 20 TPS right now, roughly. But then you can launch thousands of these Ethereum virtual machines on top of the IOTA ledger. And what IOTA as the base layer enables is the security of these smart contracts so that they cannot be tampered with, and the interoperability. So one smart contract chain is able to transact with another smart contract chain, transfer assets and transfer data. That's like the most simple explanation of it. It works similarly to how Polkadot has the relay chain and the parachains. And we're big fans of how they've built up their network and is very sound in that regard. Ethereum 2.0 also has a similar approach, right? And so this is basically our answer of saying, hey, we didn't have smart contracts yet, but we are able to leverage IOTA in the best possible way and are able to learn from from the smart contract architectures of others to come up with the best possible solution right now. And that's why we've been working on this for the last year. We have an early alpha version already out right now, so you can basically deploy local smart contracts. And by the summer, we are going to have a new sort of beta version of it, and where you can really deploy smart contracts more reliably. And then we are going to port over the Ethereum virtual machine. Our big objective here is to really come up with an exciting solution for the market this year, so that developers can start building on top of it. And we're going to see some dApps in DeFi and NFT marketplaces, auctions and stuff like that, all being built on top of IOTA as well.
What's the benefit? Why would a developer, let's say, you know, do a smart contract on the IOTA platform versus just Ethereum 2.0 or even Polkadot or some others?
Yeah, ultimately it is about attracting a different sort of target audience as well, right? IOTA is its own community and is its own ecosystem. We have a big focus on the machine economy. So I think the way that the future looks like is that we have this cross-chain interoperability. So a dApp that is built on Ethereum also wants to run on top of IOTA and wants to make it possible for the assets to be swapped between the different chains, right? And because we have this machine economy focus, I definitely think that many application developers will find it very exciting to have a lending market for machines, for example, right? And that type of stuff that is then also being utilized by large corporations. So for one, that is a big a reason, right? The adoption that is enabled through IOTA itself. And another reason is that we don't have these scalability issues and the fee issues of the other networks. And obviously, we're always further innovating as well. So we also have some interesting concepts to do native assets on layer one. And at the end of the day, it becomes about, it's all about the ecosystem that you build on top. I think Polkadot has successfully built their own ecosystem. And we will do the same, right? We have a large ecosystem development fund. We want to support developers and we want to really see these applications being built on top of IOTA. And it's just about developers seizing these opportunities. Mm-hmm. So as I said in the beginning, all of these different protocols will coexist. I think there will maybe be a dozen at most, and the sort of fat protocols, if we can call them. But the interoperability between them will be exciting and there will be different use cases as well.
Got it. So, I mean, is your vision of the future, I mean, do you see Bitcoin as like the store of value? Then you have like a dozen or so other protocols that people build on for, you know, smart contracts, transactions, just for running a crypto economy. Is that kind of your idea?
Yeah, exactly. I definitely think that is something that's very realistic because Bitcoin does have the store of value narrative with it. And I think technologies like ours, they have this sort of utility function to it, right? We have a very strong focus on IoT and this machine economy. And yeah, I think this interoperability is very exciting, like wrapping Bitcoin in IOTA so that you can utilize your Bitcoins in certain use cases. Utilize your Bitcoins to earn yield, right? And I think that's really what the future should look like.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's interesting, like machine to machine, like Tesla is like, so there's a paper by Square and ARK Invest where they're like, hey, if you pair Bitcoin mining together with solar panels and batteries, then you could monetize the energy,
right?
And then this evens everything out where it makes it very much, very much, very more, much more lucrative, you know, to install solar panels. But it seems like, I mean, I agree with the premise, like, you know, as machines get more proliferated, as they get smarter, everything's connected by the internet, you have this huge just economic system or opportunity, you know, machine to machine, especially as they get... Yeah. super intelligent, you know, with artificial intelligence, they're able to make their own decisions. Anything, like, can you maybe expand or share your thoughts kind of on that, you know, trend and direction?
No, like you're absolutely right, right? I really think that the way that our economy is moving forward, and we also get this feedback from big companies, is that their business model of today is not going to be the same business model tomorrow. Right, an automotive manufacturer might not be selling cars tomorrow. They might be operating sharing fleets. An energy company, electricity company, is probably not going to sell electricity anymore or operate the grid Instead, they should focus on tokenizing their solar parks and stuff like that, right? Make it investable. And our technology is focused on enabling this monetization for these assets that are sort of locked today. And I think the biggest locked asset today is data, right? This data economy itself is huge. You mentioned it before, I should be able to sell my data and be able to monetize it. And that's a big focus of ours, right? Enabling this data economy so that machines can be monetized and that machines can also become even smarter by buying and acquiring data from other machines. So I think data economy is a very important focus of the future, especially if you think about Chainlink providing data to smart contracts. The core of that in the future will be a sort of data marketplace that provides the data to smart contracts to provide this autonomy and automation. So I think that's very exciting. And other than that, our big focus is really also to enable these new machine use cases. Like, how do you make it possible so that the electric vehicle has a wallet so that it can be paid for getting you from A to B, right? And have this autonomous sharing fleet. And where then DeFi and smart contracts come into place is that you can tokenize these assets and then you can make them investable, right? I want to invest into a solar park because I believe in the future of solar and I believe it's a big return on investment. Or I want to invest into a sharing fleet because I think those vehicles will reach a return on investment within the next 5 years, for example, right? So tokenization is core of that. And smart contracts, DAOs, and DeFi is also core of that so that you have new financing models. Like many companies that we speak with, they're really excited about the prospects of DeFi for IoT. You have new ways to finance your expansion, new ways to finance your operations. So I think that our role at IOTA is to play a crucial role in getting DeFi more into the traditional world as well, so that we work with industrial companies and basically build a bridge as well for them to benefit from these new opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Why kind of stop or focus just on machine to machine? Like, for example, there is huge opportunity, like say online, where for content, let's say I want to pay a cent. You know, right now you have all these paywalls where you have to like sign up for subscriptions and pay like $10 a month or something to read articles. Like, I'd rather just have it where I pay like 5 cents to read the article, or, you know, 10 cents or 1 cent or even a half a cent or something. You know, I just touch a button and it gets sent. You know, if you truly have a feeless, scalable, you know, platform, why not offer that as to the internet, you know, a feeless microtransaction, you know, platform?
It's definitely possible. It's definitely one of those areas where we encourage the community to build it. For example, very soon we're going to have a browser plugin similarly to MetaMask, where you can start to pay for your on an online shop, right, easily with no friction point. I think all of us, the first time we used MetaMask and we utilized a dApp and you had no sign-up process, you could immediately participate. That is the objective of all of the crypto economies that we are building, because there's no friction point, there's no entry or barrier. You own your assets, identity, data, and you should be able to participate in these new economies. So yes, we have a strong focus on the machine economy, and because we believe that the future of decentralization is about powering IoT and being powered by the Internet of Things, but we don't stop there. I always try to frame IOTA as sort of digital infrastructure, but it's a term that's more distant to some people because infrastructure is not that exciting. So that's why we really focus on machine economy. But more broadly defined, we're really focused on being the most optimized layer one protocol out there that is feeless, that is scalable, and is fully decentralized, so that you can then build these use cases on top, right? Machine economy will be one of these use case areas on top. DeFi will be another use case area on top, and data economy another one. So we're really about enabling all of that, but right now the focus is on the machine economy and we are slowly moving forward with the rest.
Mm. I want to ask you about the foundation. So with IOTA Foundation, My understanding is you have what, 130 people or so? Is it, has it changed in recent weeks? 140 or so? Okay. Yep. Are these full-time employees like working in the office, or are they, I mean, you might be remote because of COVID, but I mean, what's the situation there? You guys in Germany, right?
Yeah. So I'm based in Berlin, so it's lovely and raining right now. we are 140 people. We are in 23 countries. So I think in Germany, we have about 30 people right now. So, but most of the team is remote. We never really had an office. So we've been remote first since the very beginning. And yeah, so it's still locked down pretty much right now here.
Got it. And then how are you guys funded? I know, like, from what I've read, you know, you guys had, you know, this early kind of donation of 5% of IOTA supply to the foundation to get it started. Are you guys still running off of that money?
Yeah. So the foundation is funded primarily through this endowment that we have. And the endowment consists of the donations from the community. Basically, back in 2016, when the project really started to grow, and we told the community, if you want to have a dedicated entity behind IOTA, you can donate money. Donate IOTA tokens, obviously. And then about 5% of all tokens were donated to the IOTA Foundation. And that's how we got started, and that's how we're still running right now. What we've also done over the years is that we are funded by the government, right, by grants. So I think about 10 to 15% of our yearly runway is funded through grants right now. And we're also thinking about other ways so that we don't have to basically touch our endowment in the of the IOTA Foundation. Mm-hmm.
What's your endowment like status right now? What percent of the overall supply is it at this moment?
I think it's like 2.5, roughly, something like that.
Okay. And how long can you theoretically last? I mean, a lot of it will depend on the price of IOTA, right? Like, because that changes the value of your endowment. Is that right?
Right. No, absolutely. Like right now we can run nearly a decade with the funding that we have. And we are really thinking about how to get external funding into the foundation as well, so that we don't have to run on that. So like philanthropy, we are doing bigger projects, for example, in East Africa, where we also get funding from partners. And one thing that we're really thinking about right now is also to do joint ventures with those bigger companies that we have, so that we have like businesses that generate profit and they're able to return those profits to the foundation. Mm-hmm. So that's a big, sustainability of the foundation is a big focus of ours. But right now we are really focused on expansion. Mm-hmm. So we have like 30 job openings at the moment.
Where can people go if they wanted to join?
Jobs.iota.org.
Okay. Fantastic.
Yeah.
And then your government grants, I mean, 10 to 15%, that's pretty substantial. What are these grants for? Like, what's the kind of purpose or focus of them?
Yeah. So these grants, usually the way that they work is that you have a consortium of companies that come together and say, hey, we want to work on supply chain tracking. We want to work on energy grids that trade with each other. Or we want to work on how to apply blockchain in e-commerce tracking. Right, so you have a use case in mind, you have a problem in mind, and then you apply to the government to get funding. So usually these grants are for 5 to 10 million euros or dollars that are then distributed amongst the partner companies. And that is how we are funded. So most of our grants right now are in Europe. I think we have nearly 8 of them at this point. We have one grant in Japan that is funded by NEDO, where we are focused on securing power plants, data of power plants. And then we also have some grants in the US right now.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. So what do you say to some maybe critics who might have seen that, you know, hey, you guys, IOTA team has promised certain things, but for example, I think there was this thing of this GIN chip, this hardware chip that you guys wanted to put into all these Internet of Things, but then that never panned out, or just some other things where, you know, is it related at all to kind of the founder drama that has happened in IOTA? And I'm curious, like, what, I'm sure you can't go into all the details, because I'm sure, you know, like you could write a book or other people eventually could write a book, but you probably don't want to do that right now. But I mean, what can you tell us about kind of on a, in a more general, you know, kind of not labeling, you know, whoever or whatever, but like, did founder struggles impact really, you know, IOTA's kind of execution plan? Did you guys have to regroup and refocus, you know, on, and if you had to regroup and refocus, what were the priorities that you guys had to refocus on?
Yeah. First of all, it's an excellent question. If I was a community member, I would think the same. So that's totally fair. I think one thing that we have to keep in mind is that all of these projects, especially the early ones, right? Ethereum, Cardano, Chainlink, IOTA, that are sort of from this Bitcoin talk area, they come from a time where nobody of us thought that this space would get so big. We always thought like, we're doing this for fun, right? We're doing this to prove the world wrong about how things should work, right? And to just to have fun, right? And I think everybody in this space, at least I can say that it has been overwhelmed with the way that it all grew so fast, right? I remember when we founded IOTA and we were happy to have a $20 million market cap, right? And we were like, wow, this is crazy, right? And then things just grow and grow and grow. And as you get a lot more pressure, you make mistakes. And we have really admitted to these mistakes in the past. And ultimately, it's just about growing and maturing and making sure that you stay true to what is the most important thing, right? And when it came to IOTA, we had some drama with some co-founders who were obviously very important in the beginning of the project, helping to found it, helping to make it great. But ultimately, it was about having to regroup and refocus on what is the most important thing. And I think when it comes to IOTA, we realized the most important thing is to prove that the Tangle, right, as this sort of evolution of the blockchain works, it can work in a decentralized way, and that it solves problems of blockchains and ultimately will get adopted. So that's why nearly 1.5 years ago, we said, hey, let's get rid of every bad thing about the IOTA protocol that people have rightly criticized us about and refocus, regroup, and then really try to deliver on that. And that is what we've done over the last year. And I'm really happy with where we stand right now. Right now, we have a very strong foundation. And crypto is entrepreneurship on steroids, right? You have a large community. One thing that is said wrong, is hyped wrong, is taken the wrong way, can be bad, be perceived in a bad way. And you have these large token holders, partners, and so on and so forth. And I think we've really learned a lot from over the years. And this is really why we are where we are today, right? So we have a $5 billion market cap. So that's really great. And we are like 30% of our all-time high. So we have big ambitions, and we are in the right position right now. And ultimately, it's about making the right decisions, and we have made the right decisions.
Mm-hmm. What do you think is the future? Is the future decentralized in terms of kind of the crypto economy, or is it a mixed? Is there a role for some type of centralized, you know, coordination, companies, powers? Yep. Like, and also another question is like, how does the crypto economy work together with the traditional economy? Like, do banks still have a role? Will they be the on-ramp, or will it somehow be kind of mixed together? I mean, I don't know. What's your take on where this is headed 5 or 10 years down the road?
I personally think that it will be a mix of decentralized and centralized, simply because similarly to the internet, we have the internet service providers who are sort of the gateways to this internet economy. Without those gateways, we wouldn't be able to communicate with each other. And the same is true for crypto, where we have these gateways like Coinbase, like centralized exchanges, like banks, PayPal, who basically enable us to participate in these economies. But once you are in the economy, you're free to do whatever you want. And I think that is the most important thing that I hope that we always stay true. Right? I don't want to see a permission blockchain that all of us sit on, where there is like a government entity that is able to see all of our transactions, that is able to stop and censor our transactions. Instead, everything should be permissionless, open, and censorship resistant. I think that's very important for this future. because we're fighting many different trends right now, right? For one, there's this economic escape for many of us, where it's like, hey, we've been suppressed for so long. We haven't been able to participate in these investment opportunities like others have, right? I wasn't able to invest in Facebook and Google when they were doing their seed round, their Series A. And there's also this sort of escape to taking more ownership, being able to decide what happens with your data, being able to decide what happens with your money, with your identity. And so it's really about empowering individuals to partake in the economy. And so I think that's very important for the future. And, you know, the way that I got into crypto is when it was, I think, 16 or 17, I wasn't able to register on PayPal. Right. So that's how I learned about Bitcoin. And it empowered me to engage in the digital economy, to create a sort of startup out of that. Thanks to Bitcoin, I was able to pay my developers and pay my friends. So this permissionless innovation is really what makes it so great. And as you said before, it's about those independent developers that should be empowered to build stuff with our tools. And the internet enabled us frictionless transfer of information. Crypto enables us frictionless transfer of assets, right? Financial assets. So I think that's really what we should strive for, these global ecosystems.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's definitely interesting. It seems like the next 5 or 10 years is going to be crazy with all this stuff that's going to happen.
Yeah, it's going to be so exciting,
right? it seems like an entire new economy is being built, you know, in crypto. Decentralized and permissionless, and it's definitely fascinating. I'm curious, what leaders or just people or projects or just who have you received inspiration from, and who do you kind of, you know, say, hey, like, is there any trailblazers or people? I mean, you've been involved with, you know, Bitcoin, crypto since the early days, right? Yeah. So you've probably seen both the strengths and the flaws, you know, of various people.
Right.
Are there any voices that you're like, you know, this person, you know, has really been just a consistent kind of beacon of light for the crypto world?
Yeah. I always make the joke, the worst thing that could happen to crypto is that a bunch of nerds got rich. So ultimately, I have a lot of respect for those people that throughout all those years, through the hypes, through the busts, have been focused on building. And that's the only thing that really matters, right? Even though we are all sort of competing with each other, we have to cooperate to make this space bigger. And that's why I have respect to everybody that has been focused heads down to building. So I basically congratulate everybody that has achieved that, right? 90% of the ICO projects in 2017 have been a complete failure, but some of them actually delivered something, right? So that's great. I think when it comes to leaders in this space, obviously Vitalik, I think, has done a great job on growing himself also as a person and as a sort of leader. And obviously they still have to deliver Ethereum 2.0. But the exciting part about Ethereum is that it has sort of outgrown Vitalik, right? It's no longer just about him, but there's a global ecosystem around it. And I have a lot of respect for Gavin from Polkadot. I think they've done a tremendous job in building up a new economy, right, with a new concept. So you have to applaud them for doing that as well. Charles is also doing a great job with his community, with building up the excitement around Cardano and also leading in a different way, right? Saying we're doing this peer reviewed. And so that's also applaudable. And so I think those are the people that I personally know the best and also think that they have been really focused on building, which is great. Other than that, am I missing someone? Who do you respect the most?
Yeah. I actually find a lot of really intelligent people in crypto. Like I mean, it's this combination of, you know, of a little bit of this rebelliousness, you know, like not wanting to do the traditional route, the traditional thing, but you combine that with kind of this competence and this technical kind of, you know, prowess a bit. And it's not necessarily like, it's like this, it's this interesting crowd where I really resonate just with every person I meet, actually. And every person I interview is just, it's actually fascinating. I'm just enjoying all my interactions with the leaders in crypto. And they're all different too. You know, they all have their different edge and different angle on crypto. I'm curious, there's a critique with crypto right now where some people think everything is hopium, right? Everything is just based on hopes. How can crypto have a $2.2 trillion market cap total? Like, what have these projects really delivered? You know, like, how much really, like, value have they really created? Or is it just kind of in hopes or anticipation, just being kind of bought up? How do you process, how can you, for a person who's new to the space, who doesn't, you know, know what's going on, like, is that a legitimate critique? Like, that there is a lot of hopium, and how would you suggest people to distinguish, like, what is a real project? What's something that's really going to stay around 5 or 10 years down the road and deliver massive amounts of value when it seems like every single project is claiming the same thing right now? You know, that they're the next big thing. Like, what are your thoughts?
I think you've actually answered it perfectly before, right? We have this revolution that is happening right now, right in front of us. This new financial digital revolution where it is not just a trend, it's like this desire of people to participate in new opportunities, right? Whether it's DeFi being able to earn yield, right? For example, in Europe, just last week, I was told by my bank that I have to pay negative interest rates.
That's crazy. Like, so what is that? How does that work out? Do you have to pay? Do they take your money
or
you have to pay them?
So in Germany right now, I pay 0.5% negative interest rate.
Negative. Insane.
So
they take your money. Like, completely.
Yeah, they take my money, right? So that's why you have to be long crypto, right? And honestly, right? I've been in this space for so long, and I always really tried to think and reason with myself, why should this not work out? And then you see all of these trends that are happening right now with the resource prices going up, being quadrupled in some cases, with inflation looming around us, with assets appreciating, and then with the financial sector just completely falling apart, it seems, right? Negative interest rates. And it just makes you think, like, what does the future look like? And then you look at crypto and then you start to realize that there's a different way to do these things and there's different opportunities. You remove the intermediaries, you remove those centralized decision points and you decentralize them. And so in that regard, it is very tangible, right? We have sort of proven the utility of crypto, of blockchain. And now it's really just about growing and scaling this to the next level. So I think the narrative is very important when it comes to crypto. Is Tesla worth, how much is it, $700 billion right now? Is it worth that much? Absolutely not, but it's narrative economics, right? And the same is true with crypto. It's all about the narratives, and the narratives of crypto makes a ton of sense because they give people hope for a brighter future. Where they're able to participate, where they're able to decide, and where they're able to control the future as well, and not being told what to do and what not to do in that regard. So I think that's very important, right? To have these new opportunities that popped up with new yield opportunities, the possibility to sell your data and so on. So that's really great. And when it comes to the future of crypto as a whole, as I said before, I think there will be maybe a dozen layer one protocols, because ultimately there's like different flavors, right? Litecoin is a different flavor of Bitcoin. Does it have a future as a technology? I don't think so. Does it have a future as a wrapped asset? Maybe, right? If the narrative is there, if the economy, if the community behind it is there, but there's only going to be like a dozen different flavors of layer one protocols, right? IOTA will be one. Ethereum will be one, Polkadot will be one, Cardano, and so on and so forth. So we'll all be in this sort of core partition between each other. And then on top of that, you have these different applications, right? Where you can then participate in new ways, where you can lend and borrow and so on and so forth. I think right now there's definitely a lot of unjustified valuations popping around, and that's just really part of this excitement, part of this newness that we also had in 2017. Nobody knows how to evaluate a crypto asset right now. It's impossible. What you can evaluate is the yield that you can generate. And in some of those projects, the yield does make sense, right? And is it sustainable? We'll have to see. Ultimately, what crypto has proven is that we went through a really, really dreadful bear market of the last 3 years. If this was more than just a senseless technology that didn't create any value, we wouldn't be where we are today. People would have forgotten about it and nobody would trust it. But we are at 2.2 trillion right now. We recovered from the dreadful bear market and we have come out of it stronger. And I think that's something to applaud. And it's also something that should give us not just hope, but also confidence into the future, I would say.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the theory that, you know, in the past year or two, like this whole use case in DeFi with given yield, right? So you get better interest rates like on DeFi than, let's say, your bank, but much more better. And it seems like institutional investors, institutions have kind of picked up on that. And there's a flow of money, billions of dollars into the crypto space. And, you know, they're finding it an alternative place to find yield. And it's kind of led to this conclusion where people are thinking it's inevitable. Like crypto is inevitable. Like the economy running on, you know, this decentralized, you know, just platforms, et cetera, giving more yield because you don't need the banks anymore. You could just go direct, right? There's so much efficiency. Yeah. And it seems like there's this kind of conclusion that the market has reached where maybe 4 years ago in 2017, there was a lot of hope and that all this stuff would happen. But now it seems like the institutions are seeing it happen. They're seeing the yield, they're seeing the use cases, and they're buying into it. And perhaps that's pushing up, you know, valuations. Like, what are your thoughts kind of on that angle?
Yeah, I mean, the best way to convince a banker is to have another banker make a ton of money, right? We saw that with GBTC, first of all, being a good entry into the market and institutional funds buying into it and also announcing it. I think that was very important that they've shown. I think 2017, there was definitely a lot of funds that bought crypto, but nobody really announced it because it was like this scary thing you don't want to tell your friends about. This awkward thing. But now 2021, they're thinking, they're much more confident in these crypto assets, and they're much more confident because, as you said, the yields are there, the returns are there, and the opportunities are there. And I wouldn't say crypto is inevitable. There's always something that can go wrong, and there's always something that we have to be prepared for, and we have to be realistic. I think that's very important, right? We should not lose ourselves in hyped up narratives. We should really stay down to the ground and make sure that we create value, right? But I'm very, very optimistic about the future and that crypto will be this backbone of the world economy eventually.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How important, I mean, you mentioned like, you know, crypto is kind of like this hope for the future, kind of giving people more freedom, right, over their finances and choices. It's an alternative path for, let's say, increasing government, you know, let's say spending, surveillance, control, et cetera. How important is that to an iota? Like, do you guys think about those values? Does it drive you? Like, what is your mission's kind of purpose? Yeah. Right? And what, you know, is pushing your foundation forward?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's one of the most important ethos and principles that we have. We want to empower the individual to partake in these opportunities, to own their data, to own their assets, so that we live this decentralized future. I think we realized early on that that is the only thing that really makes sense for us as a project, right? We want these people to participate, to not be limited, to not be censored. And so this notion of permissionless ecosystems is really crucial. That's why we didn't do a permissioned blockchain. We didn't go down the Hyperledger route or the Hashgraph route, simply because we realized that permission blockchains, they're interesting for enterprise, but they don't solve these problems for the average citizen, right? And we also realized that these decentralized systems, they need to be permissionless to be fully secure. And that's really why we went down that route. And yes, like it's really crucial that we enable that future of decentralization.
Awesome. How can people follow what you're up to? I know you guys have iota.org, right? That's kind of the main website. Are there any other resources and places people can go?
We have iota.org, where is our website. And on Twitter, you can just do /iota. You can follow us on Twitter. We also have a YouTube channel, Iota Foundation. We do bi-weekly videos at this point, like AMA sessions and stuff like that. We really try to be close to the community. And I think if you really want to engage with our community, go to discord.iota.org, where you can engage with our developers, with our team, with the community, and just see where the fun and the craziness happens.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, definitely lots of stuff happening in crypto, I'm sure. I wanted to thank you, Dominic, for just extending your time, graciously sharing with me and my audience about Iota, the future of crypto, the crypto economy. It's been super fun. And yeah, I definitely hope to keep in touch. Thanks, Dominic.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much, Dave.
Okay, take care. Bye.
Thank you.